front, we now turn our sights to our southern neighbor, Iowa. Keith Schilling is the Iowa State Geologist and the director of the Iowa Geological Survey, as well as being a professor at the University of Iowa and Iowa State University. Keith obtained his BA from Knox College in Illinois, his master's from Iowa State, and his PhD from the University of Iowa. Keith will be sharing results from his investigation into the hydrology of pre-Illinoisan tills. So with that, if we can focus our attention on what Keith has to share with us. Thank you very much, Keith.
Well, thank you so much for hanging in there. That's all I got for the intro. Thanks for hanging in there. I appreciate seeing all these faces out here. This is some work that started in the early 90s, believe it or not, from a USGS collaboration. And we picked it up about a decade later. And now it's probably been a decade since I last was talking about it because... You know, it's an unfunded project that just keeps lingering. So, it's good to know that the 10 years since I've talked about this project, groundwater's probably flowed about 4 centimeters. So, it's pretty much the same as where I left it. So, pre-Illinoisan till. So, we've been hearing a lot about the different geologic formations, the till formations across Minnesota. Iowa's Des Moines lobe formations are rather simple. The pre-Illinoisan is the one that gets pretty complex. So pre-Illinoisan advanced over Iowa and over the mid-continent several times over the last 500,000 to 2.5 million years. So this is kind of the extent of pre-Illinoisan glaciers. At some point, we have Illinoisan advance that just clipped southeast Iowa a little bit, and of course the Des Moines lobe advanced in central Iowa, you know, 10, 12,000 years ago. So our focus is in eastern Iowa on pre-Illinoisan till. So not Des Moines lobe. Now this is old till that's been around for 500,000 years. So let's see what groundwater protection this old till can provide. We're all aware of what fresh glacial till looks like. Unsorted mixture of sand, silt, and clay with some clast thrown in. Old-time stratigraphy, believe it or not, this is still the model for so many people. It's crazy that pre-Illinoisan is just from original work 100 years ago, 50 years ago, was still looking at two advances of pre-Illinoisan till in Iowa. We had this Kansan and Nebraskan. Of course, that's so far out of date anymore. We know that we've had multiple glaciations in Iowa over that 2 million year period. So now we just lump it into called pre-Illinoisan. The stratigraphy of pre-Illinoisan tills in Iowa has not been completely resolved. There's been a lot of work done in western Iowa and eastern Nebraska. Some pioneering work there 30 years ago found as many as 7 different tills in western Nebraska. So all delineated by these ash beds that have been very well dated. So we were able to know that there's all these tills because we had volcanic ash in between these tills. And I'll talk about that in a second. In eastern Iowa, there's also been several advances, but they've been largely put into two formations, the Wolf Creek Formation and the Al Burnett Formation, and those have been delineated largely based on clay mineralogy. What's the percentage of expandable clay minerals are in one pre-Illinoisan unit versus another? So we're getting down to some pretty fine detail to start distinguishing these things. But focusing back on western Iowa, we have these nice little markers of volcanic ash beds that can be very well dated. So, for example, here's a formation in western Iowa. on the bluffs of the Missouri River. You can kind of see that white ash layer within there. You've got to take a closer look at that. It's all just volcanic ash. It's got the shards of volcanic glass associated with it. These were Yellowstone eruptions that caused this volcanic ash deposits in Iowa. So you can kind of see the comparison between Yellowstone and something like Mount St. Helens, which is just a little blip there. So these were humongous explosions several times over the last 2 million years. So these pearlite ash beds are what we use to date pre-Illinoian tills in western Iowa, and they have different dates of almost 2 million years, 1.3, 620,000. So if we just had these ash beds across Iowa, we'd do a much better job of delineating our pre-Illinoian stratigraphy. But at this point, there's quite a gap between what we know in western Iowa and what we know in eastern Iowa. So there's still room for exploration, should you be so inclined. Now, the pre-Illinoian tills in Iowa, again, as many as seven of these are remarkably consistent in terms of texture. Very, fine textured. You know, you can kind of see the comparison here with typical Des Moines lobe tills, at least our Dawes Formation till and this superglacial deposit here that has a lot more variability. The pre-Illinoian till through a deposit in eastern Iowa, very consistent. So we'll see the actual percentages later. Occasionally you do see some sandy units within that or paleosols and stuff developed on there. All right, so after that little background, we're going to be focused on a site in eastern Iowa located at the rest stop of I-380, interstate rest stop between Iowa City and Cedar Rapids. So the landform region is kind of our, what we call the, or somewhere between the Iowa erosion surface and the southern Iowa drift plain region, kind of a hilly landscape for the most part with some thin lust over weathered pre-Illinoian till. This site was picked because it was the lust cover was absent, so it's pretty much pre-Illinoian till over the bedrock surface. So we'll get into the history about this site right here. So in 1989 through 91, the Iowa legislature funded a couple of major studies in Iowa called the Till Hydrology or Aquitard Hydrology Project. There was a companion site in central Iowa that actually Bill Simpkins was in charge of, and he reported some of the data from that original investigation, so from the early 90s. Now, this pre-Illinoian till site in eastern Iowa was installed by through a partnership from the Iowa Geological Survey and the USGS. The USGS collected samples at that site several times over the 1991. They did a monitoring report, but funding dried up, and they pretty much walked away. So from 1991, that site was pretty much abandoned. They put quite an investment in there. They put 22 wells, nested wells, installed at this rest stop, and two major transects with a couple of well nests off that main transect. So it's quite an investment of resources to make these extensive well nests through the sequence up to over 100 feet. When I came to the Iowa Geological Survey, late 90s, I knew of this site. I mean, I was, as a budding hydrogeologist, I mean, these kind of sites just don't appear out of the blue very often, you know. I also knew it was an abandoned that had not been used for 10 years or more. So when I came on board, I kind of had my eye on it, and I thought we should reoccupy this site and see what we can make out of it. So I concentrated on two well nests, a north nest and a south nest, all installed with multiple wells, like Bill was talking about with their current site, with about a 3-foot well screen, with a series of 8 wells on one nest, 6 wells on another, penetrating the complete sequence of Preel and Knowing Till. We drilled the soil core. I did convince some state resources to put towards this. We drilled the soil core there, took some soil samples. We purged and sampled the wells on a few different occasions, measured hydraulic heads, and this essentially just see what we could learn out of this reoccupied site. The site stratigraphy, pretty straightforward, considering all the photos and complicated stratigraphy we've seen all day. So I'm a little bit, it's kind of underwhelming to present this level of stratigraphy, but we did have an oxidized, leached layer sitting on top of a model of really oxidized, very weathered sequence. And then sitting on top of that was a very intact, dense, unoxidized sequence. All indications are from grain size and clay mineralogy. We did not see differences there. Didn't see any paleosols or anything like that. We feel like we had essentially one complete formational sequence of pre-Illinois till of about 30 meters. There was one sand unit within the till sequence found in both locations. Again, not really exactly sure if we could connect the dots on that, but they did find them at approximately the same elevation. The texture of the till was about 23% clay, so that kind of fit a little bit with what Bill said, reported from southwest Minnesota. 40% sand, 37% silt. Clay mineralogy was 62% expandable clay. So this puts it in this Wolf Creek formation. So essentially we had one complete oxidized and oxidized till sequence from this site. Kind of see the locations of the nested wells. The black there is just the well screens. And you see we had a handful of wells in the oxidized and an equal kind of number in the unoxidized portion. From our detailed soil core, you kind of see the sand unit, of course, show up. But overall, you know, not a lot of textural heterogeneity at this location. So very, very consistent package, which in some ways makes it simpler to kind of analyze some of the hydrogeological implications. We're not really dealing with a lot of variability here. So this till, again, on the order of 500,000 years, we're talking about groundwater flow through something like this. During this soil core, we did take samples of the material itself for maybe a fuller suite of characterization. I won't share all the results, but these are kind of interesting just in terms of some nitrate and ammonia. So we did see ammonia starting to show up. Oh, I didn't highlight those. We did see ammonia in the lower unoxidized portion of the till. Essentially no nitrate through the entire sequence. Total phosphorus, and these are numbers that you would see for any soil sample across the Midwest, you know, kind of on the 300 to 500 level. I guess one of them was a little bit higher. And we saw an increase in kind of organic carbon content through the unoxidized part. The hydrogeology gets a little more complicated because you purge these wells, and we'll see on the hydraulic conductivity measurements, they don't recover very fast. This was the figure there on the right that's really hard to read, but it does. It was I just clipped it from the report that USGS did in 1991. So they bailed the wells dry and let them recover, and you kind of see over the course of months, they are still trying to recover in the unoxidized portion months and or a year or two later. Okay, so you bail these things dry and trying to get a sample, for example, and you could be waiting a long time to get a sample to fill a bottle. So that's what we're dealing with here. It's very slow recovery. Some of the K measurements, we did slug tests where we could. Other times, we're just using these long sequences of water level recovery to use that in the kind of more slug test programs to get some idea of what the hydraulic conductivity is there. So you put a slug in and, you know, just things don't move. So how long does it take to for these wells to recover from purging? I'll go into this in a second, but one of the things we did was when I reoccupied these wells, I was kind of interested to know what happens when these wells are sitting for a long time. So I rented YSI or Hydrolab, a mini-son, lowered it down into the casing, essentially to see what the geochemistry was like after these wells have been sitting for 11 years and unoccupied. And then we purged them, let them recover, then I did it again after a year, and then 1 week later. So three different times I lowered a mini-son down these well casings. So in many cases, for all of you doing till hydrology, it's interesting to think about as these water levels are trying to recover so you can measure a hydraulic head, there's geochemical changes going on in that water column as those waters are slowly recovering. So the question was, how long would it take for these wells to recover after this purging? So this is a table from a paper I kind of wrote on this, and saying after 11 years of recovery from purging, 14 months, or 1 week, assuming that the 11-year of recovery represents the true water level surface, 14 months later, some of those pre-Illinois, the unoxidized part, was still recovering to get to that level. Some of the oxidized part, of course, would recover in a week. But the unoxidized one, you better be careful about getting your water sample kind of figured out before you just bail this water out. You may not have any water to sample. So for you to remove the water in the well, it might take years for those water levels to recover. So I mentioned the mini-son lowered again these well casings. So this well had been sitting unoccupied, unsampled, with PVC casing for 11 years. So we lowered the mini-son in it. What you could see is some interesting geochemistry developing here. So an easy one, of course, is temperature. We saw a big temperature swing when we reached this kind of gradient about this threshold about halfway down the well casing. pHs were very high, 8 or 9, pH of 9 or more. Specific conductance increased abruptly. DO had a sharp decrease at about, that was in time, because I let it recover and then lowered it another 10 feet. But about 50 or 60 feet. And then the ORP, the redox conditions, probably showed the sharpest abrupt contact. So we had this really super anaerobic condition develop at depth, or it was the native material and all the stuff on top was more oxygenated and had much higher ORP. So, of course, it cannot come as a huge surprise that you let a well sit for 11 years, you know, get some geochemical changes. So that's not a big surprise, although it was interesting to see how sharp that line was. It was such a sharp stratification when I lowered that down. So this is kind of a complicated slide, but these are the two shallower, two representative nests on both sides of the north and the south transect. You kind of have those labeled. The smaller ones here are the oxidized till that are shallower wells, and then the deep one down below. So there's three different periods where I lowered that mini-son down the well. You can see the one with the black circle is 11-year purging interval, then a 14-month purging interval, and then just 1 week. So you kind of see if they behave similarly, especially across the 14-month and the 1 week period, or how they compared to the 11-year purging interval. It's kind of interesting to think about, to take a look at things like DO. If I have that flag. Yeah, the DO there. They both exhibited, after 14 months, a similar stratification that developed. But what was interesting, it looked like that stratification may have started the minute they started recovering, because of the water slowly coming into the well bore, being equilibrated with the atmosphere. So we start seeing that geochemical change darnly immediately, because of 1 week after we purged it, we already saw some level of DO between the water at the top of that water column. It was slowly filling the water column versus what was coming down beneath it. It was kind of buffered a little bit. So you kind of maybe think about how that propagated all the way up through the well column. There's some interesting implications for that when you think about how to sample these slowly recovering wells. I mean, if you put if you want to sample the DO in some of these and you grab a sample right off the top of the water column there, as that's slowly coming in, it's going to pick up a atmospheric DO and maybe much higher than what would be typical. You can kind of see some of the other patterns. I mean, some were spot on from different times. Others showed a large variability. But this was kind of a unique feature here. We did write up these results. It's in a paper published in Applied Geochemistry. So this is getting to the actual hydrogeology here. Vertical gradients here are very difficult to try and get exactly figured out, okay? As Bill and others presenters today have talked about, you know, vertical gradients through these kind of glacial aquitard systems are really difficult to get to figure out exactly what it's telling you. So in the South Nest, we had pretty straightforward decreasing hydraulic head with depth. And then at the base of the section, we had this major decrease in head as the next well in that transect in the Devonian bedrock was much, much lower. We kind of think there might be a phenomenon called this underdraining phenomenon where the lower part of this section was draining out faster than what it could be equilibrated or receive water from up in the soil column, up in the column. So this might be kind of an artificial thing, but overall the hydraulic gradient through the unoxidized till was about 1.2 through that whole sequence. But you see it varies quite a bit, whether it's a pretty straightforward, 0.09 here roughly, 0.8 here, 1.2. We got very variable gradients depending on what two wells you want to try and pick. So that's a little complicating factor. Part of that could even be as we're trying to get these wells to recover. These were largely done after those wells have been sitting. So just allow us enough time to make sure that the water levels that we're measuring there are actually true levels. The hydraulic head or the connectivity measurements. K tended to decrease from oxidized unoxidized till. Not a huge surprise. Ranging from 10 to the minus 8 to 7, minus 7 in the oxidized part, and the unoxidized till upwards of about 10 to the minus 10 meters per second. Again, these were really, really kind of like seat of the pants kind of numbers because of how slow these wells were recovering. Some of these numbers were even developed on some of those initial 1990 reports, where when they bailed them out, we could see these long-term recovery graphs. And we plotted that data, analyzed it this way. Devonian bedrock was much higher than the overlying till. So what's the groundwater flow velocity? What's the velocity through this pre-Illinoian till sequence? Well, again, like Bill said, just assuming Darcy's law is applicable here, we did see differences between the oxidized and unoxidized till, assuming a porosity of 0.3, and in general some averaging of hydraulic gradients. So we saw about 1.4 meters per year vertical travel time through the oxidized till, and then depending on what level of K used or what hydraulic gradient you used, through the unoxidized till, we could see ranges from, say, 2 meters per 10 years or 2 meters 1,000 years or 2 meters 100 years or 1,000 years. So let's just say it's pretty long, and it's we'll go from there. Because it's really, as you can kind of see where I'm going, all three of those ranges are appropriate for groundwater protection. So there's going to be some variability, some questions about what is the true value, but in the end, it doesn't really matter a whole lot. It's just, it's really slow. We did some water quality sampling on these wells. Tritium was detected in 5 wells. there was an anomaly at this below or above a certain depth in the oxidized portion. No tritium was detected below this except for this one anomaly here. I'm thinking there was some problem with the well casing after all those years. There's really no business to expect tritium there. So that well was largely thrown out of the picture after that detectable tritium. Just didn't make any sense. And given the long-term history of this site, it's pretty conceivable to think of some cracking in this casing at depth that may have caused that. So all the groundwater in the oxidized till was less than 60 years old, 50 or 60 years old. There was a slight shift in the 018. We can look at the levels and debate that a little bit, but not overly instructive since there really wasn't much variation across this unit there. And the isotopes did plot on the meteoric water line, so not any indication that there was substantial enrichment or anything like that from local precip. Other groundwater quality, like everywhere in Iowa, we'd pick up some nitrate, even though this was a perennial cool season grass at a rest stop. But it was right next to a cornfield, so not any big surprise. We picked up nitrate in those oxidized wells, 2 and 3 milligrams per liter, low for a row crop in Iowa. Ammonia, we did see an increase with depth, which is kind of consistent with what we saw with the ammonium concentrations in the soil itself. DOC increasing slightly with depth, also consistent with greater TOC in the soil profile that we saw with the sediment sampling. So, the title of my talk was alluding to, what sort of groundwater protection can be provided by these old tills? So to do this, focused in on Linn County, which is this county where Cedar Rapids is located, and it's the county with the rest stop itself. In Iowa, and I don't know about Minnesota, we have probably 50,000 to 70,000 between driller's logs and strip logs, that we call them, where we have pretty good handle on the stratigraphy at these locations. So these strip logs, in some cases the driller's logs, well, they note the difference between orange clay and blue clay. That's pretty much the difference between oxidized and oxidized till. So I looked at all those for the Linn County area, or at least enough to make sure that I knew what I was talking about. And I looked at let's back up a little bit. So it's clear, I should have had a slide in here about that, that the unoxidized till portion of this profile really provides the groundwater protection. So the oxidized till part with detectable nitrate and tritium and so forth, less than 50 years old, provides very little groundwater protection. The unoxidized till part provides the vast majority of the protection. So I was interested in seeing how much protection that did provide in the Linn County area. So the key was to find how thick is the unoxidized till part of these profiles. So if I pulled out some strip logs from the region, it was pretty clear from plots such as this that if you look at the unoxidized till thickness in meters compared to the total till thickness, we really didn't see any unoxidized till when the total till thickness was less than 20 meters. Or where the depth of bedrock was, okay? There was a relationship between unoxidized till thickness and what the depth of bedrock was. So the greater depth to the rock surface pretty much implied that we were going to have a much greater thickness of pre-Illinoian till. So if you take a county like Linn County, Cedar Rapids is located right here in the, you can kind of see that black outline. I contoured the thickness of that unoxidized till with some fairly crude groundwater travel time estimates using that middle estimate. Okay, so anywhere in green has groundwater travel times, vertical travel times to the aquifer being on the order of 1,000 years or more. So bedrock area is overlain by less than 12 meters of overburden, considered vulnerable for contamination and so forth. Okay? Interesting map. I was kind of curious how this would work in terms of measured well water concentrations. So we pulled out our private well inventory database, and lo and behold, I mean, I haven't done the spatial statistics on that, but there's a pretty good spatial correlation of where we saw nitrate in excess of 45, or essentially the MCL, and where the holes in that unoxidized till sequence was occurring in Linn County. So I thought with this, it's a pretty good model that the groundwater protection from this unoxidized till part of these pre-Illinois till sequence is doing a pretty good job. So in conclusion, there's a paper reference of that effects of slow water recovery rates on water column geochemistry in aquitard wells. You can take a look at that. But the moral of that story is that it's really difficult to try and get accurate geochemical readings from these wells that are slowly recovering over months and years to know what the right value is. I think this downhole instrumentation was kind of interesting, although as you're raising and lowering this thing, you're kind of doing a little bit of mixing that I can see with the DO, but overall, I feel like it might be worth it to know where that stratification line might be. And I think if you want accurate samples of some geochemically sensitive species, you might want to go below that kind of line, that redox line that develops. Specific to old tills, they're not over the hill, as my title would imply. These old tills, upwards of 500,000 years old, still have groundwater protection abilities. Okay, the oxidized part with detectable tritium, nitrate concentrations, and so forth, are clearly a zone of recent circulation, groundwater circulation. And the unoxidized till part is pretty much provides the main groundwater protection effectiveness in these systems. The vertical travel times through the pre-Illinois till were orders of magnitude higher in the oxidized compared to the unoxidized, and the thickness of the unoxidized till largely controls the vertical groundwater movement through these systems. So then any underlying aquifers would be vulnerable to contamination should this part be thin or absent. So... Oh, and I wanted to announce this. This was announced earlier. So any students that are left, like, you know, here you go. Here's your opportunity. So we do have an opening available at the Iowa Geological Survey. So I knew I was coming up here to speak, and I actually extended the announcement an extra week just so I could potentially capture anybody here. So there was one reason to come up, was to make this announcement. So with that, I will take any questions.
So, thank you very much, Keith. I'd like to open the floor to questions.
You showed a map of the Cedar Rapids area, and you were showing the red dots, a flag of 45 milligrams.
Well, it was as nitrate, not nitrate N, as N. Divided by, you know, little bit, and you get down to 10.
Got it. Thank you.
Not inconceivable, though, in some cases. Yeah.
More questions? Kelson.
Where does the bedrock get recharged then?
Well, there's the Cedar River runs through there that's lying on top of bedrock. So, and there's all those areas where it's not covered that is receiving a recharge. So there's no shortage of recharge into that aquifer.
Maybe I missed it at the beginning, but what was the total thickness of the tills that you were referring to?
And it was about 30 meters.
Okay, and then what was the screened interval?
About 3 feet.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
More questions? Vanessa?
Do you guys try to clear out the screens at all? Was there any buildup on those 3-foot screens?
No idea. So, yeah, that's all I can say. So, no video camera or anything like that. So, could very well be.
It was, I think, noted that the information from when the wells were installed, they also had the same slow recovery rate, though?
Yes, that's right.
So it probably would eliminate them.
Yeah, right. When we measured the recovery, they were right in line with what we saw before. So there's no indication there was a lot of frustration.